Hey everyone, Steve Adubato. This is Lessons in Leadership with my colleague, Mary Gamba. By popular demand, she's back. Let me introduce her. She is doctor with a PhD, Regina Foley, also with an MBA. I mean, how many degrees does she have? She has a lot. She's president of specialty hospitals and clinical services and chief nurse executive at our partners at Hackensack Meridian Health. Good to see you, Regina.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Regina, I got to ask you about this. PhD and the MBA, what, in your spare time?
The being a nurse is in my bones. Was raised to be a nurse, went to school to be a nurse right out of high school. I'm an OR nurse by background. So as that world evolved, I'd had a degree, a bachelor's degree, but my colleagues nationally were getting MBAs because at that time, it was a couple of moons ago, nurse leaders in the OR were negotiating contracts and working with vendors in order to consign goods and to get products in for our patients. So I thought, well, I should be doing that too, so I could, you know, be commensurate with my peers. Obviously proud of where I work, and I wanted to make sure that we had, you know, the best surgical services available known to mankind, and getting that degree, you know, the MBA was pretty formative. And then the kind of part B was it to getting a PhD. It was a terminal degree. It was a bucket list item for me. It wasn't
really.
Yeah, it wasn't required in my job. It's not like we're required to have it, but I felt that I, you know, the most noble profession known to mankind are physicians. And I was working really strongly and very collaboratively with them. And I thought, I want to be able to go toe-to-toe from a research perspective, understanding the process, understanding what evidence-based care was. And the only way I could really speak to it is if I knew how to do it myself. So there was a program right here in the great state of New Jersey that I went to, and had amazing faculty. And that's how I landed with those credentials.
Good stuff. Before Mary jumps in, your passion for nursing comes from
anyone you knew?
Anyone you knew who was a nurse?
Exactly. Yeah, I was raised, my mom was a nurse, and it was just, she was a home care nurse. And from a very early time in my life, I remember that landline phone ringing on a weekend or during the week. And she would say, no, I have to go. And she'd, you know, get her bag and leave. Sometimes on the weekend, I would go with her. I remember going in the patient's homes, and she'd say, you're going to sit right there. Don't move a muscle. You're going to sit right there. And then I saw what she did. I was like, wow, that's really cool. Like, we're going to this house cold. You don't know what you're going to get involved with. And very often it was, you know, maybe an insulin reaction or whatever. And so I saw really early on the impact that a nurse can make. And I think I got it right, really wrong from him.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Mary, jump in.
Regina, you are inspiring so many people right now. So thank you for that. And one of the things we all challenge ourselves with is really inspiring, motivating our teams. And we know that you are very, very into recognizing your team members, recognizing them publicly. Talk a little bit about that and why is that important? I mean, in nursing, I could only imagine how long and challenging these days are. You're literally saving and impacting lives every day. So talk about that connection between leadership and the importance of recognizing your team.
Well, the action happens at the bedside, and the nurses and the caregivers are at the bedside routinely, day to day, not me. So I feel like my background or respect and appreciation, had done it myself. And if I can be helpful in either inspiring or recognizing excellence, showing appreciation and admiration for what they do. You know, the nurses never leave the patient. They're with the patient all the time. Then they're part of the caregiving team. It's not just, simply the nurse, but
sure,
the very natural, you know, the recognition or saying thank you or personal note.
How about the social media stuff you're doing? Tell folks. So you carry your phone around with you?
You never leave home without it, right? The phone. And although I'm not a photographer, I'm not a communications czar like both of you, when I would go, I go to all of our hospitals. And honestly, there's greatness. There is truly greatness happening at the bedside. And I really wanted a way, not that I thought about it from a student perspective, it was, you know, I personally have pride. I have pride and respect
That's
for the
right.
caregivers. So it's very natural. So I'll go to a unit, I'll go to one, you know, I'll go to our hospitals, and now it's kind of taken on because I leverage the professional platform called LinkedIn. And yeah, I guess you would say I'm in these selfies, but the team members, the nurses, the caregivers themselves, they want to be in these pictures because they know and they feel the authenticness of the appreciation.
That's right.
And admiration. We're just leveraging a picture within it. But then I'll post, and I write them all. You know, I post my own. I own the typos. I own the grammar issues and the, you know, maybe the emojis here and there. But, you know, the team members seem to appreciate and respect it. And it's just another way of saying thank you and that you're valued and you're heard.
And along those lines, I'm curious about this. And you and I were talking, and I've done a tremendous amount of coaching, leadership and communication coaching at HMH for years, a physician leadership academy I coach in, and top level professionals like Regina. And she's always been, she's a sponge. She's always looking to learn and get better. But along those lines, I'm curious about something. Talk about learning about leadership, right? Bedside as a nurse / nurse leader, bedside leadership compared to C-suite leadership. Your turn. Go ahead, Regina.
Yeah. Again, the action's happening where the patients are. You know, I work personally myself to work very visible, to be visible, try to get to a hospital at least a week, and not just be an episodic in the door and got to go, take a picture and go, but use it as an opportunity to connect. First of all, to listen, right? You couldn't be a leader without listening, and that's first and foremost. So I don't go there as a talking, hey, this is a new protocol, this is a new thing. Get it. It's very much what's going on, what are your pressure points, what's not going well today. Hey, we launched this new technology. Is it working? Honestly, I really need feedback. Like I need real, raw feedback. The only way that happens, if you go to the environment that clinician is in, because it's implicit safe. I'm in their environment, in their house, and I'm asking questions of what's going well, how could we do better? And beyond the technology and taking care of patients, very much the narrative is about them. And first of all, I have natural interest. That milestone in their life, who got recently married, who's back from maternity leave. You have a new baby. Show me the picture of the baby. Well, oh, you just had a christening last weekend or whatever it may be. And I don't say that because to check off the box, it's very natural. I literally care about the 8,800 nurses that are in the organization and the 7,000 doctors and the 32 other thousand team members here that I, you know, it's just a way of being an active and a good listener that you're there to get their peep out.
Real quick, Mary, got about a minute left. Mary, I'm going to get a yes or no from you. Regina talks about tremendous empathy and caring. From a leadership perspective, as a leadership tool, do you think, Mary, you can teach empathy and caring as a leadership trait, or you have it or you don't?
No, I think everything is teachable. And Steve, once again, you and I share a brain because I was going to pivot because as you're talking about all of these qualities, Regina, empathy was coming into my mind. We've all been patients. We have all been on the receiving end of nursing care and of physician care. Talk about empathy. And does that help each and every nurse leader, if you will, that to really understand, hey, how would I want to be treated? And that's where that empathy comes in, because I do believe, Steve, that it can be taught and learned.
Got about a minute left. Go ahead.
It never leaves the nurse's mind. It's a foundational skill that every nurse has. It's natural. It is improved over time with experience and life. But very, you know, many of our nurses have been patients in their own life and for their family members. So empathy is a pivotal ability that is very natural and authentic. That translates to the patients, because patients know it very quickly. I often hear, you know, get patient notes about an angel, you know, the nurses are an angel or they were heaven on earth, et cetera. And that, you know, that certainly resonates well.
I've known Regina for well over a decade, and you can't fake it. You may want to practice empathy and caring because you read it in a book somewhere, or you live it as a part of your life. You do it because it's who you are. That's who Regina Foley is every day, and she represents a whole range of other clinical and other professionals at HMH, our longtime partners. Regina Foley, our friend, thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Steve.
You got it. I'm Steve Adubato. That's Mary Gamba. That is a great healthcare leader, Regina Foley. We'll be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. All right, folks, part of our Leaders in Law series, we're honored to be joined by our two good friends. They've been on separately, but we figured out how to get them together. Kevin O'Toole is managing partner at O'Toole Scrivo LLC, and his colleague, partner, and friend, Tom Scrivo, managing partner, O'Toole Scrivo LLC. Hey, guys, good to see you.
Good seeing you, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Okay, listen, why don't we do this? There's a great spot that was put together a few months back. By the way, O'Toole Scrivo were the lead sponsors of a very significant gubernatorial debate. It's one of the first times I saw this commercial spot. Let's take a look at a commercial that describes the firm, and on the back end, we'll come back and talk about it. As Warner Wolf used to say, let's go to the videotape.
O'Toole Scrivo, one of the fastest growing law firms in New Jersey. Relentless expertise, proven results. Kevin O'Toole, 3 decades as a senator, assemblyman, and mayor. Thomas Scrivo, chief counsel to the governor, bar association president, famed trial lawyer. Two leaders, two distinct paths, one shared vision.
Tom and I met first day of law school, and we talked then about forming a law firm. And with that, we said we have to have really smart, aggressive lawyers, folks with really deep expertise with certain disciplines. And we said there had to be an overall achievement of giving back to the community.
That's exactly what we've built. We partner with charities, match employee giving, and volunteer year-round. At O'Toole Scrivo, we define success as making a difference.
Different paths, one vision. O'Toole Scrivo, where expertise meets integrity.
So Kevin, there it is. I know it's only 60 seconds, but beyond that, what year did you and Tom meet at Seton Hall University Law School?
August of 1986.
86, okay.
86.
Tom, your first impression or impressions of Kevin O'Toole in law school?
It's very odd seeing someone called out Kevin O'Toole and seeing this Korean guy stand up. But putting that aside, we hit it off immediately, and we became instant friends, sort of got each other's vibe, understood each other very, very quickly. We were both back row people. So we sat in the back row of the law school class. All the smart people sat up in front.
Father, I'm not buying that. You guys were back. It had to be a strategy in the back row. Kevin, first reaction, thoughts about Tom Scrivo?
I mean, look, Tom was obviously very poised, very polished, very together. The rest of us were a little nervous. We sat next to each other. I found that he was from North Caldwell. I was from Cedar Grove. And we just had a very casual conversation. And we literally hit it off the first day some 40 years ago and haven't looked back. And to Tom's point, we are two very different people, very different personalities, but we just meshed immediately. Tom always got me. He's always been an advisor, a consigliere. He's been a dear friend. He's been, you know, at every important event in my life, in my family's event, Tom's been there front and center.
It's interesting, Tom. Kevin mentions the term consigliere. You would in no way, that wouldn't be connected, because I don't know if Kevin's ever seen The Godfather.
Probably not.
Is that a movie?
Okay, Scriba, hold on 1 second. Over and under, conservative number of times, Kevin O'Toole, talking about leadership and life, has made some reference to The Godfather, over and under, in 40 years.
5,000.
Okay.
Close.
Close. Okay. here's the serious question, Tom. When you went out and did your own thing, and by way of background, chief counsel to Governor Christie, other law firms, did a whole bunch of other things. Kevin is also, and by the way, check out our interviews with Kevin as the chairman of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, former member of the state legislature, the state Senate seal I see behind you. Kevin, I was never able to get to the Senate from the lower house in the state assembly. You understand why.
You got to win a second race to get that, but let's not talk about that.
Back to leaders in law. Go your own way. Tom, in the back of your mind, did you always think, I'm going to get together with O'Toole and we're going to start a law firm?
I wouldn't say it's in the back of my mind. I'd say it's probably in the front of mind. I mean, we talked about it from very early on, doing our own thing. Again, as you said, Steve, we were on parallel paths, but we were never separated on those paths. I don't think there's been, you know, a handful of days that have gone by in those 40 years that Kevin and I haven't spoken. So we were, you know, each other's consigliere. Kevin calls me consigliere, but there's no person who frankly gives more counsel guidance to me and to others every day than Kevin. So we were each other's consigliere for all these years. And we definitely thought about doing something together down the road when the time was right. And about 9 years ago, the time was right.
Kevin, how would you describe the, I'm big on the term culture, leadership culture. And I know the firm is involved in a lot of philanthropy. You're big supporters also of our State of Affairs public policy program on public broadcasting. But you support a lot of not-for-profit initiatives, charitable initiatives, a lot of volunteering. Describe the leadership culture, Kevin, of O'Toole Scrivo.
Well, it's twofold. I mean, I think Tom has brought such a dignified and magnificent expectation of excellence in terms of the law. He's a perfectionist in many ways, and he drives us to another level of being the best of what we are. And over the years, Tom and I, since law school, have always been involved in charitable events. I mean, we did the first one, muscular dystrophy, I remember, in the winter of 1986. And every year since, we've done toy drives for University Hospital. We've done all kinds of fundraisers. And then we got together, we brought it to a whole nother level, have had national campaigns for food banks, hospitals, cancer research. And I kind of feel that as we arrive at a certain point in our lives, you have an obligation, moral, social, economic, to do really well, not only by the folks who you are managing, but also with the society and community you live within. And that gives me a great joy. It really does.
Following up on that, Tom, what message do you believe that sends? I'm big on the idea of mentoring, developing the, because you guys graduated in 86. So think about this, 40 years ago, right? The series called Leaders in Law. Teaching, coaching, mentoring, you guys coming out of law school, right? Versus teaching, coaching, and mentoring younger legal professionals in 2026 and beyond. A, how much to what Kevin just described do you think younger people get? A and B, how the heck do you coach and mentor them? Tom?
Well, I actually think that it's kind of easier now to talk about this philosophy of giving. More now than even before. As Kevin said, we embarked on this, you know, right out of law school, right in law school, actually started doing fundraising, raising funds for people, the food banks, the toy drives, all that.
Students?
As students. Yes, as students.
Go ahead. So you decided to start doing it then. Go ahead. Pick up. Sorry for interrupting, Tom. Pick up your point.
No, we did it as students because there's always situations in life that are brought to us, whether through its familiar relationships or other people we have come across, where we have, you know, encountered, you know, people who are in need, and we've answered that need. Like, so we started that in law school. To be able to do it now, frankly, is much more rewarding because we do it on another level, as Kevin said. But we kind of think that there is more of an awareness now among those who are graduating than there was back when we were graduating. So we often find people who are attracted to our law firm, young, talented, smart lawyers to be, who come to us because of our giving and because of the philanthropy that we are engaged in. Many times we're interviewing candidates here, and we talk mostly about the giving and the social awareness projects that we are involved in. So it's a very, very, I don't know what the answer is and why, but it's very much on top of mind for this younger generation.
So how about this? By the way, we'll put up the law firm, the website for the law firm, find out more about O'Toole Scrivo. I'm curious about this, Kevin. Tom talks about giving. I'm going to switch gears. Giving honest, constructive, hard-to-hear feedback. I've had this conversation with you in a one-on-one and with Tom as well, but now that I have you together, I'm going to put it out there. Both of you knew my dad very well. Kevin knew him really well. And my dad was big on giving. Did we call it feedback, Kevin?
No, listen, your father, who was one of my mentors and probably was most instructive in my political life, and he was really a tough person, as you well know. He gave you very honest, in-your-face, and some would say, I wouldn't say rude, but in-your-face a criticism and made you a better person. He had a certain demand. You go there early, you deliver the suicide numbers, you know, all of those things. He demanded excellence from everybody, including himself. And I got to tell you, he made me the elected official, the politician that I was. He drove me to a whole different level.
But see, here's where I'm going with that. I get it too. And I was on the other end. And I'm not going to make it about my dad. By the way, check out our series, Remember Them. There's a half-hour feature we did on my dad and his legacy, and it really made a difference. But Tom and Kevin, here's my thing. So I grew up with that. Kevin, you saw it. Tom, you've had tough feedback too. And my father gave new meaning to tough feedback. Here's the thing I'm trying to get to. Younger lawyers coming in. How the heck do you give honest, constructive, hard-to-hear feedback? And I'm not talking about the kind of, my dad would often use profanity in your face. I mean, yeah, Tom, you're smiling because you know what I'm talking about. Tom, how the heck do you give honest, constructive, hard-to-hear feedback to younger lawyers coming in who aren't used to hearing it?
Well, I think you do a disservice to younger lawyers if you're not honest with respect to feedback. I think you're only prolonging problems for them in the long term, and you're not allowing them to develop in the way that they should. So, number one, you have to be honest. Number two, the approach may not be exactly the same as it was 40, 50, 60 years ago in terms of language approach and everything else. It doesn't mean you're not direct, honest, forthright, and constructive in that criticism. You're not raising your voice, but you're also not sugarcoating it. And so the feedback that we give is direct, and frankly, it's welcomed by people. So, you know, might the approach be a little bit softer? Yes, but the message is the same.
Kevin, do you tweak your feedback depending upon certain variables with your audience?
Yeah. Listen, rule number one in life, know your audience. So, look, I mean, the hardest lesson you got to learn in life is you have to see yourself how others see you. It's like one of the tenets in Qigong. You have to see how others see you. So what we try to do is bring in some of these, the proteges and the folks we're mentoring and say, here's how you are being perceived. And you don't necessarily say it from your voice, but from the vantage point of others, so it's not as being as critical. So you got to kind of message it a little bit so they're not being insulted or having their, you know, being offended, but just kind of give them examples of how they're being seen. And once you give them that visual, that setup, they look at themselves totally differently. They said, I didn't know that. I wasn't aware. Here's what was said. Here's the response. Here's the lateness. Whatever that is, have them see through the eyes of others and maybe it's not even your eyes. And they take that in a much more positive, reinforced way.
Well, let me ask you this. My colleague, Mary Gamba, who co-anchors the program with me, both of you know well, we give each other honest, constructive, hard-to-hear feedback, and it doesn't always go
right
exactly the way we want it. What about you guys giving each other feedback, Tom?
Look, I
mean,
We don't agree on everything. That's, you know, but we have those discussions between ourselves. We never leave anything unsaid. We make decisions and we move on, and we make decisions very quickly. Kevin's taught me that very well. A decision that is not made is in itself a decision, which means that it just prolongs something. So we make decisions very quickly. We set our two positions out. If they are different, most of the time they're not. I could say 95% of the time they're not different. But if they are, we discuss it. We agree. We move on.
But Steve, Steve, so, I mean, if we get in a room and like I'm like more emotional, I'll jump out and say, you know, just have 1,000 ideas. What Tom manages to do is say, well, that's an interesting way. And he'll try to pull me in a direction that's probably more, you know, moderated or it's a little calmer. And sometimes we'll just say you're crazy, and which is all right. I'll accept that. But we literally on 95-96%, we are on the same page of getting things done efficiently, effectively. Professionally, but sometimes I got to be throttled back a little bit.
Last word on this. The word trust, trusting each other. Most important relationship trait between the two of you, Tom? Trust.
1 through 5.
Kevin, trust.
Not even close. I mean, not even close. Like I said, Tom, I trust him with my life, my kids, my whatever it is. Like, he's there. I mean, you can't do it better than that.
That's leadership. That's partnership. And it's rare. To Tom and to Kevin and the firm and all the great folks at O'Toole Scrivo. Hey, thank you guys for not just joining us.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah. And by the way, Mary, whom I trust with my life as well, will be back in the last 2 minutes to give some commentary on the O'Toole Scrivo experience. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. All right, again, two-minute drill. Got 2 minutes left. Mary, what's your biggest takeaway from Tom and Kevin?
Just, we talk about the importance of relationships, partnerships, and working together, that dyad leadership, and just seeing how you don't, if anything, it's almost better if you don't have two identical personalities. You and I feel, are a great balance, that yin and that yang of, it's just, it's so fun to watch, to see when it clicks and when people recognize that in each other. So for me, that was the, what two people are capable of doing, convening, bringing together, and then having that vision, that was the biggest takeaway for me.
About 40 years ago, they meet in law school at Seton Hall, one of our longtime partners at Seton Hall University, in the law school. And somewhere, not even the back of their minds, in the front of their minds, they knew that one day we'll be together as business partners and always remain friends. That's rare.
It's rare, and I truly believe in leadership. If we are more open to seeing those opportunities, to being open to, hey, there may be something different about this person, and we could do something great together, I think the world would be a better place.
But along those lines, in the minute we have left, you know, I'm curious about one of the ways partnerships work well is when each participant in the partnership acknowledges that not only don't they have all the answers, but they're curious to know what the other partner thinks and knows that they're better by being aware of that, as opposed to, I got the answers, I don't need you.
And that's hard. That is very hard to do, because we are all by nature very independent creatures. So the more that we can lean in and see what we can learn from somebody else, instead of trying to instill in them what we believe they should believe, I think it's just amazing. So,
last thing. Sometimes I know, we'll say goodbye, Elvin, I get it. Sometimes it's out of insecurity and fear that we don't acknowledge that we don't know. Not that we really do think we know. It's that we're afraid to say we don't. And I'm off my soapbox. That's it. For Mary and myself, we have a great partnership. O'Toole and Scrivo have a great partnership as well. They've just been around longer. We'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Pragramedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, New Jersey Transit, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.